of an ambidextrous context, and the creation of a bridge here through largely the leaders and other processes. Now, if you look at this classic first order, second order table in most qualitative study, which is now becoming mainstream way of presenting, we looked at the core primary data, you know, from the interview scripts, and clustered the first order concepts, and then looked at what higher level construct are they representing. So concepts like patient needs, patient solution, openness to change, integrity. So in a sense, suggesting a patient-centric, values-based culture, which was very strong in both the hospital chains that we looked at. Similarly, a clear focus on selective hiring. So at two levels, for your nursing staff and other allied staff, it was a blend of regional and local hiring. So not national at all, very deliberate. And then for your clinical staff, largely overseas. So it's a very, it stands out. So they were bringing in experts from the UK, US, or other countries who'd spent some time and are wanting to now come back to India and do their final rounds of service to the world or to their community. So we had, not to say that they didn't hire any local clinicians at all or experts from locally, but a vast proportion of their workforce was trained overseas. We also had evidence of empowerment-focused work design. So typically the nursing staff, the frontline staff, was given extensive freedom. And that freedom was enabled by the leadership and managers. So to give you an example, one of the hospital chains had invested in a program with Harvard Medical, wherein they would send about 35 nurses to Harvard every year. And these nurses would be on representing from those trained nurses who had undergone the nursing leadership program beyond the executive table, which is very unusual for a hospital to have a nursing leadership executive present on that level of leadership. But these nurses would also challenge sometimes the clinicians and medics, which is also quite unusual. And then they'll have a conflict and tension. And that tension used to get resolved through what we had this term of ambidextrous managers, who would play the role of a good cop and a bad cop. So the nurses would come crying to them and say, you know, I tried to say so and so, give this great idea, and we were taught at Harvard to do this, and this person doesn't, you know, allow us to do this. So one person's playing the good cop, you know, calming her down, and the other person then picks up the phone. And they would have pairs of these people at different sites and in different hospitals who would pick up the phone, whether it's the clinician or it's the nurse or it's the allied staff or whoever that might be. They would, one person would put the pressure to listen and accept unless you prove something else or you bring something else to the table. And the other person would, you know, console or calm down this person. Because there's a creative idea there. There is some innovation to be pursued here. So that duality, the positive and negative reinforcement, the hard versus soft, or the good cop, bad cop. So that duality served very well as a bridge for facilitating a range of process, clinical, and business model innovations. Now, talking more about these nurses in particular, so when they come back, as part of their brief from the nursing leadership program was to first of all mentor two more nurses, act as a coach till they are ready to be sent to the US for the second round of leadership programs, but also undertake a strategic project at each site that they are posted. So for instance, they would say reducing the number of bed sores or reducing the infection counts. So like a little Six Sigma project, if you want to call it that, or some other kind of a little hospital, I'm missing the word here, improving fatality statistics, for example, or whatever. They've got different KPIs and benchmarks which are driven by JCI. JCI is the International Hospital Accreditation Body. And then you have NABHS, I think, which is the national. So they have certain quality metrics, and there's an international quality metrics. So you're trying to deliver better on those metrics. And nursing leadership was very critical here because they're the people who are working at the coalface, directly in contact with the patients, but also with other technicians, but also with clinicians and physicians. So they bring up those issues and take these projects as, then that's part of the leadership. And through that, a lot of process innovations were delivered. And in terms of clinical, I'll come to clinical as well. But let's finish these two first. Now, the employee benefits and rewards. And again, this is a combination for different schemes for nursing staff and different schemes for your specialist physicians and practitioners. So for nursing, what they realized was one of the biggest barriers for recruitment of nurses was one, because they do the odd hours, you know, late night shifts and everything. So their safety was paramount. What was striking me when they were telling me the story was the story of the BPO and the call center industry. What is it, the Scorpios of the world or the Tata Sumos of the world picking up and dropping contact center agents. A very similar story was being replicated here. So three nurses, four nurses sharing a accommodation, and they come together, go together. But what they were claiming, and I queried the nurses whether that was the case, is there's also this informal exchange happens at the house on ideas. And when they are socializing and having that trust and confidence. And then they go back with more zeal and enthusiasm to really fight for it. Once they think that if there are four people in a room believing on an idea than just yourself, then you're somewhat more motivated to pursue it. So there was this flexible benefit accommodation transfers, but they also started to listen to the nurses because it was a very close-knit community of nurses, and the accommodation complexes were also quite nearby from a logistical point of view. So a Sumo would go or a Tata, whatever, would go and pick up eight nurses from almost two houses down each other. Now, in that sense, almost everybody knew what project each one was working on. So the management would allow a lot of leeway and flexibility in terms of structuring their own benefits. So some people are from, let's say, if it's Kerala or let's say Goa, for example, and or Maharashtra, they would want to celebrate Ganpati. But there was only one budget for celebrating Ganpatis. And the only one way of doing it. Subsequently, they allowed nurses to do, there's the budget, go and do it yourself, whichever way you wanted. So there was that level of flexibility. But there's also recognition of whatever projects that they undertook and delivered. And there were quarterly celebrations on that. Associates of the Month was also there. But for clinicians, it was very different. That was, to retain them, there was a different compensation plan. To undertake an innovative practice, which is not yet done. So new to the country, new to the market, new to the profession. That was the criteria. So if you do all of that, within the range that you're privileged to carry out that operation, you would be rewarded differently. And you would be also then allowed to go and share that practice with your peers internationally and get their feedback. So to give you an example of a clinical innovation, one of the facilities I visited was specializing in orthopedics surgery, you know, hip replacement, knee replacement. So these are all people largely who've been trained overseas, let's say in the UK or US, and they are presented with a case that they've never seen before. So a limb that is deformed to such an extent that is no longer in the medical books that they have, or they've not actually seen that in the UK. So they term it a different kind of a case, and they call it a complex primary. And I burst out laughing. You know, complex, it's so complex, but it's primary. It's the first time it's been ever presented. And there is no textbook answer. There's no medical procedure for us to solve it. So we have to now innovate in some way. It's clinical innovation. So they were doing some stem cells research alongside to treat that kind of patient. And then they go out and present to the to their colleagues globally at medical conferences and say, how would you fix this? What is it? Is it a finger or a hand or a knee? You know, they were not even close. It was so much deformed. It's in such a bad shape. So there are no established best procedures or best practice solutions to some of the manifestations that are typical from the Indian context. I don't know whether it's procrastination or simply lack of fund, or she'll be all right, you know, just carry on till it's really to the point that you have to do something about it. But yes, there were those examples. And so the CEO allowed them what they call as privileging and credentialing. So they are privileged to work in a certain specialization, and they're credentialed based on their past experience to carry out certain procedures. But that doesn't mean to say that they can have an open slather. But so there's some level of control, and then they have to justify. But at the same time, they were given full autonomy to do what they wanted to as well. Not to, you know, put their life at risk, obviously. So learning and development, I've talked a lot about, you know, nursing leadership and behavioral coaching. This was more for the clinicians, interestingly, because there was this professional identity divide, and which is very strong and pronounced in most of the healthcare settings. A surgeon won't talk to a physician, won't talk to a radiologist, won't talk to a nurse. So it's a clear hierarchy and identities. So in that sense, so a lot of behavioral coaching was put in place to make sure these people and these groups work and work together with each other. And at the same time, some values-based training, because that would feed up also into the patient-centric. Another example for business model innovation was at this maternity care hospital, wherein you had, this simple business of delivering babies. So there's nothing complex about it. So it's either a C-section or a normal delivery, some prenatal and antenatal, and that's it. So where's the scope for innovation here? That was the challenge. But the way this thing turned out was quite an interesting story. You know, most of these hospitals were in large cities, and where young mom and dads or would-be mom and dads are experiencing parenting for the first time in their lives, and they don't have any family support. So let's say Bangalore, for example, all two IT, both are working in the IT industry and got no idea how to raise this new child coming on. So they need some education, some training. So these nurses were working very closely to them and their anxieties. They came up with the concept of care and cure packages. So they sliced it down to a basic plain vanilla delivery package to bells and whistles package. You know, I don't have the exact words of the packages, but you get the drift that, you know, you can have a high-end package where you will get a nurse after the delivery at your house, bathing the child and supporting the child. And when you get out of the hospital, you go in a limousine, which is, you know, all stitched up in a ribbon, and everybody knows there's a new baby in town, and the mom and dad are over the moon. So these little services, this is all business model innovation. This has nothing to do with healthcare per se, but the amount of value that was generating for the parents, that packaging, and have a candlelight dinner for the new mom and dad, you know, all of that. Then you know, 20 mom and dad in a restaurant having candlelight dinner together with their crying babies. So it's a new idea, but they're making money on it. So and probably the return was much higher in this case. And so there was lots and lots of these examples that were shared. So this was not from the CEOs. The CEO never thought of these. It was all ground up. And then selling it over to physicians. I don't want to have a bar of it. How would the physician listen and then put it on the table? And that's why nursing leadership on the executive table proved very productive. So I've got some more examples on what they were doing. So one of the strategies was, and this is amazing, because they'll say, you give us a 3-star hotel, we'll convert this into a hospital. There's no greenfield site, it's called brownfield site. I never heard this term before. What's a brownfield site? So we use a brownfield site, convert it into a hospital. We have got this capability, this now we know the knowledge, what it takes to convert this place into a hospital. After all, it's only a maternity hospital. You don't need to have all those sophisticated equipments and just have one or two specialties per site. So standardization, you can see that exploitation thing happening here. Local and regional talent, you understand the lay of the land, the people and what their likes and dislikes are, what their challenges are. So it then feeds into it very well. I think I've given you this idea of how the business model, you know. So serving an untapped market, largely market driving rather than market driven. So the educational programs were also quite popular, the pre, post, and social programs. But the linking pins, as I mentioned earlier, were largely your ambidextrous managers or leaders, but also they put in incentives in their performance management scheme that every leader has to make sure that whoever his or her direct reports are, that they capture some process improvements or some innovation programs through them. And their role is more of facilitation rather than driving the change. So there was purposive pressure to get it from the ground up, because that's where the interaction is highest. That's the value creation zone. And that had worked in the past. And they said, well, let's do calculated risk taking on that. At the other one, again, the super specialty hospital, they'll just either buy an existing old hospital, you know. For example, this particular site that I went to was a union of seafarers. And they had a little medical unit, and it was just in poorest of poor condition. But there's plenty of land, the building, the infrastructure. Actually, we just polish it up and put in what is needed, and bringing the skilled people to it. So pretty much very similar story. Again, brownfield sites, local talent acquisition, except in this case, they had a slightly bigger focus because of specializations and quaternary care rather than, you know, simple maternity care. So they invested in national and international accreditation and Harvard Medical largely for market signaling, but also for empowering leadership within the nursing and the frontline staff. And I think this did wonders. You could actually feel the difference of talking to a nurse in the previous hospital and talking to a nurse here. The amount of confidence was amazing. And the CEO was a woman, if I'm not giving too much away, was also very upbeat about this idea that you have to, because this is where most of the ideas and the problems can be identified. But context also, like I said, played a major role here in exploring the innovation in clinical space. You know, those late manifestation of disease or complex primaries, if you don't have it, you would not innovate. And again, there's an element of risk-taking that was allowed to the physicians, but also to the nurses to extend the professional boundaries. That was the most fascinating part. So there's, I think, a paper that needs to be written on that too. So just getting my head around as to what angle should I take there. Because what we were seeing is, you know, in a traditional healthcare setting, you'll find these professional identity boundaries very strong, almost impermeable, at least in the West, it's like that. Maybe in India, it's a bit more flexible. But because there was support from the top, you know, that pushing that boundary and taking that risk was somehow managed very well through ambidextrous leaders, I think. So in line with what might be expected, both sites were found to rely on a bundle of efficiency-oriented, so for exploitation, and also empowerment or high-involvement-oriented practices for exploration to achieve ambidexterity. So HR role, as I've shown you through different practices, is quite critical here in this sort of study. So we say it's largely exploratory, but it allows IHRM researchers to evaluate the exploratory power based on existing perspectives in the literature, as Farndale is also saying. So that, despite the developing context, some of our findings can be reliably explained from literature. But it doesn't kind of trivialize anything, because most of the debates in IHRM explicitly accentuate the importance of context before adopting a universalistic approach. So, and if something holds good for different reasons in a new context, so that itself is a notable contribution. What else? I think the role of contextual conditions. So yes, we saw context was very critical, particularly in the clinical innovation space, but also, I don't know whether the context that was created through the leadership by empowering nurses is to be replicated in other settings. Clearly, you know, it was more pronounced in the second super specialty chain than the first maternity chain, but that creating that environment for nurses to interact is an important one. And both Brendan and Rebecca, they do an awful lot of work in social identities. And so they could easily connect that there's a contribution here social identity based on culture, profession, and hierarchy have been shown to be a factor in the effectiveness of interaction of healthcare teams in the West. The significance of HR role in countervailing this hierarchy has implications beyond India. So in that sense, it's a new finding as well. But also, you know, not just HR, but also the managers and leaders, because they were the real enablers, I would say. But then they made a choice to decide what sort of HR infrastructure they should have. So overall, the role of HRM in facilitating collaborations, training and recruitment is central for building innovation capacity in emerging markets, and contextualizing knowledge gained from overseas through feedback from patients by giving them lots of freedom also allows you to develop more opportunity to explore and exploit knowledge there. So there was lots of other examples I could talk about for flexibility and empowerment, but you could actually feel the confidence, you know, when the nurses were saying. In fact, when I interviewed some of the nurses, and there were examples of nurses being uncomfortable to take this role, because it's not traditionally for nurses to go on a leadership role. And sure enough, this had an impact in terms of employee attrition of nurses. And then some of them came back because they had experienced this side of the world and then went back to the old side of the world where the nursing boundaries are what we know of, and say, oh, that's horrible. We had so much freedom here. So you want to come back and work for this company. So there was, in particularly in one, I think two nurses I met who had gone back, quit the company and come back. And both of them were saying the amount of freedom and experimentation that you're allowed to develop yourself here is far, far greater than you can expect here. Even if you go to Dubai or wherever, you know, it's just not there. And I think this is something we enjoy as well. So context, again, in creating that context of empowerment and flexibility was valued. And once you value something, then you do more of it, isn't it? So the ownership of HR activities underlying innovation was confirmed here as well. I mean, essentially the lessons to be learned here for both developing and developed markets in terms of what they can do in the healthcare space. This does not mean that every other hospital chain is doing in India an exemplary job. In fact, just today we had some news about hospitals in Max. With some babies, you know, anyway, we won't go there. But the point is, there's lessons to be learned from good practice, and empowering from below seem to be working in these two case sites. And having a mix of exploitative HR practices or efficiency-driven HR practices and empowerment-driven can very well create a ambidextrous context. I think that is pretty much it. Any questions? I hope I didn't put you off to sleep. Questions or comments?
The issue of looking at context was something quite interesting. I was trying to figure out, suppose the same study was conducted in Australia or New Zealand. Do we have a similar result? Do we have the same set of similar set of patterns come up? The reason why I'm wondering is because these two hospitals that you referred to, they seem to be quite resourceful.
One of them was able to send, not both, but the other one invested in training quite extensively. So the maternity hospital one had training modules and behavior coaching, but the super specialty one used to send up to 30 people on an annual basis. And this also came about by an accident. They were looking for a hospital chain to partner with. Harvard was in India, Harvard Medical. And they somehow learned about this organization and they wanted to partner with only this hospital chain and no one else because of their values and their way of working. So in essence, the word gets out in terms of your management approach, your leadership approach. And then when from that point, they grew from strength to strength in that area. So it's not an exact parallel that you can compare, but there were aspects of similar training that were provided by the other hospital, largely leadership, project management, and behavioral modules of training.
And the kind of parallel question to this was this a conscious decision or drive from the top to have performance metrics?
Very, very deliberate.
Something ground up.
No. Ah, well, good question. I think that was very deliberate. It was part of, so there were not just the senior leadership was the influencing force here. So there's the credentialing body, you know, NAHB, NABHS, the Indian Hospital Accreditation Body, but also JCI, which is the international. So they are having a prescriptive approach on metrics. Now, metrics, these are the easier ones to do. You know, you can easily reduce the number of bed sores, number of mortalities, number of deaths, number of diseases. That's the easy one. But now, each site can have a specific problem. Now, and that, if you're not addressing, if it's not part of the JCI framework, the problem still remains. So the nurses are empowered to really pick that up and take that as a strategic project. Now, that if that enabling from the top wasn't there to give them the skills and knowledge and the confidence and support, they probably would not have been able to deliver as well as they did.
I think the middle level, you referred to ambidextrous managers, They were able to resolve some of the issues.
Yes, that was a beautiful story as well.
Was it a conscious, again, choice to look at who are these guys, managers who are able to resolve these conflicts as they arise? Was there some specific selection and some selection parameters for them, and or did it just happen that there were two individuals, one who was able to pacify and the other?
No. Very, very clearly mandated from the top. So what, if you think about it, let's say my head office is in Bangalore, right? And I've got hospitals in 5 different cities. So invariably that person responsible for that has to be the head of the hospital site, the site head. And then the site head would identify 3 or 4 key other people from different functional areas who would then form teams. So if it's a nursing issue, I'll take a nursing lead here. If it's a radiology type issue, then something else, then it's a physician issue and something else. So they'll form pairs of, I mean, in 2 sites that I found was one person was common, the hospital head was common in all. Because he had an oversight of what's happening and where the pain points are and where the problems are. Now, how to deliver on them, he could not have done it all by himself. So sometimes even 3 people in a team, sometimes even 4 people, but largely a paired approach. So because the problem would arrive from a particular domain, specialty, so you should have, you know, your confidence or control over that resource, and then the people should feel free to go up to this person to voice out. And then it's, so I'll do the heavy work and you do the soft work. Amazing. So in that sense, it was deliberate and there was planned because they knew there's going to be change. There's going to be a lot of empowerment needed to bring about the change. In fact, the hospital head I spoke to said, the first thing I did was I sent out an email saying we will be formalizing a change program down the line. But at this stage, any bright idea, silly idea, stupid idea that comes to your mind, just send me an email. If you don't want to send me an email, drop it in this box, you know, the old-fashioned way. And there'll be no repercussions, but I want to know what the problems are. And then you had on parallel this support from Harvard training and stuff. So people then started to, so that trust had to be built up to allowing people the freedom to say something bold. And that took 2 to 3 years to get to that stage. And I also explored with them, were there any side differences? And he said, yes, of course, there will be side differences. If when we start off a new brownfield site, it takes on average between 2 to 3 years to get it to some level of performance to where we are at. Obviously, you know, you'll have to get that same level of pairing and understanding done, and then some percentage of the nursing staff there also will have to be trained as part of the Harvard program to carry out those projects. So if you don't have that critical mass as well at a site, it'll be hard. So to get to that critical mass and to get to that confidence and trust building takes about 2 or 3 years. But once you're there, then you're really hitting hard on the KPIs and delivering good outputs. So it was quite a revealing thing to, you know, expect in a hospital chain. Yes. Oh, yeah. Because they're doing both. So each is feeding into both. So that was what we were finding. So it's not that one is... Okay, so let's take one example. Let's look at, for example, learning and development, right? So you've got nursing, leadership, behavioral coaching, technical training. So technical training and value-based training, for example, was strengthening your exploitative routines, right? You can logically see that. And the nursing leadership, which is deliberately out there following the event to explore new ideas, to explore better ways, either in the form of business model innovation or process innovation. So that's exploratory learning. Similarly, you could look at... So a priori was here. So the theoretical exploration was in the second order. But that was what the first manual coding was from the primary data. So the themes and the concepts were at the first order, were directly from the data. So clustering of those themes and patterns were here. And then you look at it at a holistic, what does this essentially represent? You know, there's a lot happening here. This overall second order theme is about what? So that's how we did it.
Yeah, but then you are further splitting the second order into these two. So I was asking, wanted to know the basic.
Because there's an aspect of both in each. That's the basis.
So no, what I'm saying is that you are not dividing the items on the left hand side.
You mean exploration items and...
It's not really like that.
Well, I mean... You could do that, but on a graphical, it becomes too complex. This is parsimoniously done. So you could then identify each and then have examples of each, yeah. But then it's just impossible to put that on a paper. I think in the background, yes, we had done this iteration, but when you come up to this, In another paper on business model, we had this for every item, you know, a quote matching, and then where it goes next and where it goes next. So it's like 45 pages of a paper.
So let's take learning and development. So nursing leadership, what you suggest is that has elements of exploitation and that has elements of
exploitation. Yeah. Yeah.
So I guess looking at a very one-off decoupling exploratory and exploitative practices might be very difficult in each of these instances. Say that even values based, when you said it's part of exploitative learning. Say, assuming value-based might be, say, being compassionate to patients. So that might involve giving a subsidy to a needy patient and charging for the better off.
Possible.
Yeah, so that might be an innovation. So you might look at a new market where there are needy patients
mm-hmm.
with a subsidy so that they can come. And that becomes, in some sense, exploratory. What is suggested is possibly looking at each of these practices. Here, these are not at practice level; these are more at a slightly higher abstract level.
Yeah.
So, looking at it at an abstract level makes it difficult to place it in either of these groups.
Mm-hmm.
So,
just a thought, yeah. But you're right. You know, what I meant was largely you can have aspects of, let's say, technical training. One would think that this is more exploitative, but that doesn't mean that technical training cannot generate exploration, and we're not implying that either. But it's just for sake of simplicity here, you know, that's the way it's been captured here. But we did not find any specific example on what you were mentioning on subsidies. Yes?
I'm Dr. Rahman from the operations management area. So my question might be tangential to what you have presented, but it is related to a thing called lean.
Lean.
Which is getting quite often implemented in healthcare. And I'm starting to do some work on that. I could see that lean also requires people to be empowered, to come up with process improvements. And so how does, as a change management philosophy of implementing lean in healthcare, how does all this fit in with that? And to try to get a congruence of culture and operations there, just for that bit.
I think the problem is not using Lean or Six Sigma or Lean Six Sigma at all here.
Yeah. To see how does it match, for instance, Lean talks about empowerment, frontline people to take care of monitoring process, do some basic
yeah.
have some suggestion schemes, do some mistakes with Kaizens. So it all boils down to for which you need to have learning and development,
yeah.
employee benefits and rewards.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm just trying to, you know,
you could probably look at it as a lean initiative, the whole thing. Yeah. Totally.
So I see from the lens of that.
Yeah.
So I want to understand a bit of it. How does that, whether having this, for instance, a simple question, would this enable that two cases which you have studied to be, you know, ready for implementing lean because they have these characteristics?
Possible. Very, very likely. I mean, I have studied Lean and Lean Six Sigma in IT and BPO context. So I tried to explore that. But given that one of them had a quality management accreditation framework, so there were aspects of that, even though not described as Lean or Six Sigma, they were essentially doing what the methodologies suggest. So if you were to go with a Lean framework, you can probably find all or most of the items, and I don't know what
might fit in.
Yeah, very easily.
Okay, just a minute. Two of these cases which you took up were all on super speciality or
maternity.
Situation on maternity and super speciality. How does this emerge out for a multi speciality hospital setting where it has lots of people with
Well, I think the quaternary care 2 to 3 was the minimum at one site. But at some of the sites, at their one hospital in Bombay, that was probably a multi, but I did not collect any data from there. So the focus was to get really good at 2 or 3 areas at each site and then build up on from there. But maybe, you know, as the specializations increase, your coordination challenges also increase, and then that goes down.
Just want to explore that from you, Nandu.
Thank you. In fact, in the IT BPO space, you can have that very well managed. I studied one very large, not contact center, but BPO stroke contact center, employing about 40,000 people, 20 specializations. And the company is well known for implementing Lean Six Sigma. So every project is a Lean Six Sigma project. So, and the only way then to normalize that is to do what they do. So I could see that doable, but then you have to have very strong leadership and training of Lean and Six Sigma all across. Something what, you know, equivalent to what maybe their Harvard medical training is enabling them to do that. But it's possible, but it's generally challenging. Unless you have that capability and you're mature enough, which is then leads to your capability maturity model.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So
yes.
Organizations more focused on giving a focusing more on giving a specific human capital.
Both. I think Harvard Medical is largely firm specific training. When I say firm specific, it's industry specific or domain specific. But there's an aspect, I think mix would be 70-30, if not 50-50 or 80-20. More of clinical or technical, in other words, and 30% behavioral, because for them to bring about changes in the technical area, they need to be equipped with behavioral skills of dealing with the clinicians and others. So their ability to influence, for example, so influencing and leadership, and so that's the behavioral part. But the getting the best practices of what is acceptable level of KPI in this specialization and that specialization, and how to do that was largely technical.
So basically, it's more of specific human capital that would help in emerging this goal of exploitative.
No, it has to be both. Because otherwise, if you don't have the behavioral angle to it, implementing change becomes difficult. So for implementing a change or taking up a project, you need to have behavioral skills as well. Otherwise, you try to do the hard nosing with the technical, it will not see the light of the day, even, So that's what I was explained. It's not totally a technical program, it's a mix. And not only that, they had some modules also for clinicians, senior practitioners, offered when the Harvard Medical team came to do their annual contract assessments. They would do a special workshop for senior clinicians. Especially when they would present with them, there's some problems in implementing this, what you've taught to these nurses. There's a hard cop, good, bad cop, soft cop approach happening. So then there was a need maybe also to support these clinicians in being more receptive and open because of the professional identity boundaries.